Hi, I'm Jessica Fries. Welcome to the latest instalment of the Financing Our Future podcast, brought to you by the Prince's Accounting for Sustainability project, A4S. Today we're going to be talking about mental health and the role the finance team can play in helping their businesses in what is an incredibly challenging time, as we all have to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm really delighted to be joined by Karen Higgins, who is the CFO of financial services organisation The Co-operators Group, based in Canada. I know from some of the conversations, Karen, that we've had before, that mental health is an area that The Co-operators and you personally have had a real focus on for a number of years. I suspect it's something that you as an organisation, along with many others, have really had to think about carefully as you navigate through this current crisis. I'm really looking forward to hearing some of the insights that you might be able to share. So welcome, Karen.
Thanks, Jessica. I'm thrilled to be here.
Karen, before we get into talking about mental health, could you start by sharing details of what life has been like for you and your team over the past few months from your perspective as a CFO?
Sure. So let me maybe give you a little bit of a backdrop of our, I'll call it our journey over the last several months. It's in fact been an incredibly busy time when you sort of hear stories about how things have been paused. I haven't exactly found that to be the case for my own professional life, or certainly that of my team, nor that of our broader organization. In February of this year, we actually enacted our infectious disease response program, given the more significant spread that we were starting to see across the globe with respect to this virus. It, of course, hadn't made its way to Canada at that point, but I think we were beginning to anticipate that maybe it should, and we needed to take those preliminary steps. And then in early March, we moved to full implementation of our business continuity plan. So that's, of course, a program you're familiar with, where we have all of our functions across the organization laid out in terms of day one, day 3, day 5, and day 10, at what day will that function come back online? And, you know, BCP is one of those things that, you know, kind of a pain to deal with until you need it. And boy, did we ever need it. And we were incredibly fortunate to have a very solid program in place, well tested, and really brilliantly led out of our enterprise risk management team. And then in mid-March, we actually moved all of our 6,500 employees, including all of our call center operations, as well as all of our sales advisors and staff. And that's another, say, 2,500, 2,800 people. And we moved everybody to a work-from-home environment. It was a tremendous amount of work that was certainly filled with a level of uncertainty. And naturally, like everyone else, we'd never done this before. I mean, we talked about it, but man, it's not something that you can maybe plan for, but you never execute. And here we were actually executing it.
Looking at how the Co-operators has responded, the finance team has clearly had a key role to play in helping the organisation to get through the last few months. For a lot of organisations, the pandemic was really starting to take off when finance were entering one of the busiest times of the year. They were about to do their year-end closes, prepare accounts, finalise annual reports. That is a tough, stressful period at the best of times, even without the additional pressures that having to respond to the pandemic presented. Can you say a little bit more about the role of finance just getting through the day job in this context?
Yeah, you are 100% accurate, Jessica, as you know, as we move to this work from home mode of operation, as I said, it was the middle of March. So we were 2 weeks away from our quarter end. We have a part of our business that's a public issuer. Our Securities Commission did provide a 45-day delay if needed. But we really wanted to endeavor to do this as close to business as usual. Like, our quarter end is a well-oiled machine. But like, you know, everything else that that we were tackling, we'd never completed a quarter end, obviously, in a fully virtual way. We, you know, did the staff have the equipment that they need? If you think about finance people, we often have spreadsheets, we've got databases. Are they going to actually be able to access the databases they need it? But of course, one of the biggest challenges we face in a work from home is our own Wi-Fi connection. How well is that operating? So we put a very small team in place to really work through the process, look at the calendar and say, where could we make changes? Where do we need to do things differently? And that was incredibly beneficial because it gave us an opportunity to sort of sit back and say, do we have to do everything that we normally did? And one of the things we came to really quickly was saying, there is no more important time for financial information than right now. Well, we thought perhaps that, well, we have to do the public company stuff. We know that's got to be done, but maybe other aspects of our business, maybe we don't need to. Our life operations, for example, are not part of our public company. So, hey, maybe we'll just do property and casualty and not the life company. And we, in really short order, went, no, we have to do everything as close to what we normally do because we've got to be able to provide financial information to our executive team and to our board. So interesting discussions, great decision making. We have an amazing finance team who frankly just execute it. The other thing that we had to do immediately was start stress testing. So from a Canadian perspective, on March 23rd, that was the lowest point in our equity markets. We were facing a 36% decline. And typically our stress testing looks in and around a 10% decline and what that means. So we knew in those very early stages that we were looking at something far more significant than what we normally would see. So it was imperative that we assess how our capital would perform under a multitude of stresses and under different scenarios. And, you know, while there are several other key elements that finance led in the early stages, the last one that I'll mention is our review of our strategic plan. We knew that, you know, what we had intended to accomplish in 2020 would really be significantly changed as a result of the pandemic. And so we set about thinking, you know, what did COVID-19 actually mean to our plans and our projects and our expected spend? I have said numerous times, I have never been so busy in my career as I was in sort of that mid-March to right through till early May.
Being so busy can put a huge strain on people and their mental well-being, adding to what many will already be finding an incredibly stressful time because of the pandemic and consequences it is having on their daily lives. I'd be really interested in hearing from you, Karen, how you as a finance professional, as a CFO, can respond and why you feel that mental health is so relevant to your role. It's not necessarily the obvious connection that people might make.
As the CFO, I'm the leader of the finance function. It's critical that I keep a pulse on how my team is coping. So you've heard the backdrop of how busy we've been over the last several months in an environment of uncertainty, in an environment of significant change. If I don't think and ask how my leaders are doing, there is something that's not ultimately going to play out. We talked about, you know, having gone through the quarter end cycle, that's always a busy time. But when we take that and we add on things like stress testing, additional reporting to the board, ensuring that our board comes along with all of the decisions that we're making, the replanning exercise, like you suddenly think about the work coming on top of what is typically a busy time. You know, what have I done? Well, I touch base all the time. And it might be just an instant message. How are things? You know, I have a good handle on, you know, a bit of their sort of extended family lives. It's just something that's important to me to know, you know, how their kids are doing, or, you know, whether a parent isn't doing well, how have they, you know, been coping through those. So it's touching base regularly just to say, how are you doing? And then if needed, providing any kind of additional support. We completed a really big project. And of course, one of the things that I would love to do normally is let's go out, or in your words, go to a pub. So we arranged a kind of a Zoom-like chat with everybody. We got everyone together and we just did a virtual toast. But that human connection is still so critical. So even though if we can't physically be together, let's think about ways to do it so that it can work differently. Our work on mental health was so critical to our employees, to their well-being, and frankly, to the success of our organization. You've heard me say, Jessica, that our biggest asset is our people. And if we're not ready to support them at all times, but particularly when they need it, like in times like now, we really are doing ourselves a disservice. And so I think that our mental health work actually contributes to our financial success, because if our employees feel good and they're doing therefore they're able to do their job and they're able to do it as productively as they can in this kind of weird space that we're in, ultimately we have success from a broader perspective.
Picking up on that, Karen, last year your team shared a really interesting worked example, really insightful worked example, as part of your involvement in the A4S CFO Leadership Network, to show how finance was supporting your mental health program. A contribution to the A4S Essential Guide series on social and human capital accounting. How did that work that you've been doing for a few years now stand you in good stead in this particularly challenging time?
It's interesting. I have thought many times over these last several months, frankly, that thank God we did the work. Thank God that we had the foresight, and that was not initiated in finance, but was initiated between our human resources team and our benefits team, that we said, this is something that we need to focus on. And then, of course, they brought finance into the fold to support them in the necessary work around business casing it. And I have often thought, if we hadn't laid the groundwork for our mental health strategy and all of the programs that came along with that work, it would be really difficult to try and do it in the midst of everything else that was happening. We do a coping series, and as an example, and some of our employees have come forward and said, this is what I've struggled with, whatever that might be, and here's how I'm coping with it. And they allow themselves to be transparent, and we put those stories up on our internal portal. And people can read them. And it is very powerful, because these are stories that of things that we're all facing. And, you know, we've endeavored very hard to break down those barriers around mental health and the stigma attached to that. I'm just very thankful that our organization stepped up to it a number of years ago. I'm incredibly proud that our finance team supported that work by saying that, here's the facts and figures that say this is the good thing to do. We all knew in our gut it was the right thing. But there's nothing more powerful than a set of numbers that say, you know, there are benefits that ultimately turn this into a very positive initiative for us.
Have you found that there are any lessons that you have been able to share, not only with your employee base, but also with your clients and their teams who may be needing to draw on you as their health insurance provider to support mental well-being at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of our key learnings was through this process is that to how to support somebody. There often can be drug therapies, which can prove very effective. But we also learned that non-drug therapies can be equally effective. And so we developed partnerships with a couple of different organizations. And one that we have found very successful, and in fact, of course, is brilliantly successful in our current world, is this virtual cognitive behavior therapy. And so that's allowing people to have access to therapists in a virtual way. And of course, in this environment, it really is a blessing. And we've been able to share those with our clients, our group benefits clients that just like us are seeing this increasing incidence of mental health and how they have to be tackled. In that review of the costs associated with treatment programs, they can be very expensive. And so one of the things that we did as an organization is that we significantly increased the individual annual benefit that our employees have with respect to treatment programs. And we really do believe that just pays us back, tenfold. But again, obviously there's a cost associated with that. But helping people manage through their treatment programs while they're still working, because that's that concept around the virtual behavior therapy allows people to still be productive and they feel good about themselves. And ultimately, that reduces the cost.
Is there any analysis you've been able to draw upon to convince your clients of the value of providing mental health services? Not just in terms of their employees' well-being, but also from a business perspective, at a time when organisations are having to really look quite carefully, in many cases, at their costs so that they can just make it through the current period. How do you convince companies that this isn't one of the areas that they can think about cutting costs? That if they do, it may not only have a knock-on effect on people's health and well-being, as you've articulated so clearly, but also on their business's financial performance, and so in many ways, really being a false economy.
I mean, we knew that there were mental health claims. One of our learnings and our challenges was we didn't really track them as mental health in air quotes, because there was that stigma attached to them. And so sort of understanding what the baseline was always an initial challenge that we have. But you open up the doors a little bit and start to shed that light in, it starts to change the dynamic. And that's one of the things that we've encouraged our clients to do, because you are incurring the costs now. There's no doubt about it. You may not see them as mental health. You may see them as just increased absenteeism, as an example. But they are happening. Whether there's an actual claim or not isn't necessarily the trigger for it. And that's some of the work we were able to do within the business case, because there was that recognition that there might not actually be a claim, but we're incurring the cost because employees aren't able to come to work, or even if they are at work, they're not able to perform at their levels. And so we have shared with clients that that's why it's important to start the journey. You don't have to go into it in perhaps the sort of scale that we did, but start it. And that would be a message that I'd convey now, as people are, you know, in the throes of this pandemic, fully appreciating that there are stresses on their employee group. As much as I said earlier, I can't imagine trying to create a program now, and I do believe that, but there are things that you can do. You can start quite small. You can do it through leader communication, that simple touch base that you do with your leaders on a regular basis. But there's simple things that everybody can do to start down a path of focusing on your employees' mental health.
You've touched on the business case for investing in mental health programs. There has been some research that investments with a strong ESG, environmental, social, and governance component, have performed better through the crisis. The Co-operators has looked at how to embed ESG risk and opportunity into your investments. And I know you've also allocated a percentage of your assets to impact investments. So far, has this approach stood you in good stead? And have you managed to continue this focus on really thinking about the impact that your investments have over the past few months?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been such an important part of what we've done. It is certainly reporting that that we do continue to focus on. You'll be aware, Jessica, that we set a new target for this four-year cycle that we're in that goes from 2019 to 2022. And we our goal out of this 4 years is to get to 20% impact investments out of our total invested asset portfolio. And this is like sort of good news, sort of bad news. We got there in Q1. But which is good. We were able to continue to make a small number of core impact investments. The reason it's the not so good part is that the total invested asset portfolio, because of that equity drop that I talked about earlier, has declined. So the denominator gets smaller, the numerator kind of gets slightly bigger, and boom, we meet our target. So, we're going to continue to focus on it. But one of the things that we do continue to see is that the performance of those impact investments continues to do better than our non-impact investments. And so that does say something to the value of that whole approach and where those focused investments are. It definitely has been giving us a better lift compared to the sort of the balance of our equity portfolio, as an example.
We're nearly out of time, but before we finish, I would like to come back to our earlier discussion. And Karen, I'd really like to hear a little bit more about the ways that you are supporting your team to cope at what is a time still of huge uncertainty.
I think our employee base know that the organization is there to support them. We have, I would say, very softly launched a program to staff that if they really believe that this is too much, then let's talk about some kind of extended leave. So that we can help you work through this, give yourself a break from that. You know, my message to them as the most senior leader in the finance team is, if you need to take a break, take it. It will never impact how you're viewed in this organization. You're never gonna, I will never look at you differently. You're simply saying, this is a time in my life right now that I need that break. And so to date, some have taken advantage of it across the broader organization. We're managing through with the few people in finance that have felt challenged. And we'll just continue to do that until we start to do something that's more normal.
Absolutely. I don't think it will be the same normal. But then I think there are probably some elements of the old normal that we really don't want to carry on with. Which brings me to my final question. I would be really interested to hear your thoughts on what you do actually want to keep hold of. Are there some lessons learned, some new ways of doing business, some different ways of approaching things, whether as a finance team, across your investing activities, or the broader organisation that you do want to take forward into that new normal?
Yeah, well, the first one that I think about is working from home. We're all doing it now, and to a reasonable extent, we're successfully doing it. It's not necessarily perfect, but we're able to do it. And when I think about it from a, purely from a finance perspective, all that we've accomplished since mid-March, sometimes it just blows my mind what we've been able to do in that environment. And across our whole organization, finance is usually the lowest percentage of staff that work from home. We just never have. I think that will change. I suspect when all's said and done, we will still be a group that largely works together because it's how it's done, but we've at least proven that we can. The other one that has been so great is the collaboration. And even though I have said it's difficult to collaborate in a virtual way, because it is, this has caused us to collaborate in different ways. And I think that's really exciting. We've had to, at times, move people around. We pulled on those people and brought them in to do other work. We would never have done that otherwise because they're in their function and we're in our function. But necessity, you know, is the mother of invention. Is that right?
It is indeed. And as we look ahead, I hope we can hold on to that sense of the possible and the inventive, and maybe apply it to some of the other challenges that loom ahead. Thinking, for example, of the climate crisis, which is something we're going to be looking at in future episodes of this podcast. Karen, thank you so much for sharing so openly insights into your experiences over the past few months, how Cooperators has been responding, finance's role, and in particular, the actions that you've been taking to support mental well-being at this challenging time. I think there were a lot of lessons and ideas and suggestions that hopefully everyone can learn from. I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. Go to our website, accountingforsustainability.org, for more details on how the Cooperators and other finance teams in our CFO leadership network have supported mental health. In the next episode of Financing Our Future, we will be looking at the role that banks and investors are playing to support a sustainable recovery. Do sign up to our newsletter if you would like to keep up to date and hear more from us. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, the Prince's Accounting for Sustainability Project, and on Twitter at Prince's A4S. See you back soon.